This is Steve.
And this is Peter.
This is Real Talk with Hahnemann. This is Real Talk with Steve Pruszynski and Peter Evans. Today, I have the pleasure of talking with Robert Fitzgerald and Mike DeJano, partners of mine at Hahnemann. Both are still active at Hahnemann, but are looking forward to the future. I thought it'd be interesting to get a look at their careers in commercial real estate and their thoughts on the future. Robert's a broker focused on Cambridge and Boston, and Mike is now a broker focused on industrial in the South Shore area, where his relationships go, but he was previously the COO of Hahnemann. I think it'll be interesting look and a good perspective of their history in Boston and the CRE world. Fitzy and Mike, welcome to Real Talk.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we'll start off with, be interesting to see how you guys all got started in real estate. I know, Mike, you had some stuff before that with, you know, the public that you were with. Robert, I'm not sure what you did before that, but you know, who'd you start with and what was your decision to get to that? We'll start with you, Mike.
Well, I graduated with a master's degree from the University of Massachusetts in regional planning. And so for the first 13 years, I worked for regional planning agencies in land use planning and water quality management. But one of those public sector jobs I had was as the director of development for the city of Peabody. And one of the responsibilities I had in that job was the development of the city's 300-acre industrial park, which is known as Centennial Park today, right off Route 128. And during my time there, we put in about $20 million of infrastructure and development loans. And that $21 million is in 1980 dollars, so it was a significant investment on the city's part. And over the course of 5 years, we sold all 300 acres, and we attracted companies to the city of Peabody like Analogic, Cardinal Health, Hyde Shoe, SS Peer. Some of those names people don't recognize anymore, but those companies created 4,000 jobs for the city of Peabody. And it was during that time that was really how I got interested in private sector real estate. It was also during that time that I became involved with Hahnemann because they were our broker representing the park. And actually, Stuart Pratt, who's the chairman of Hahnemann, was still active in brokerage at that time. And I worked with Stuart closely to get those companies up to Peabody. So that's basically what was my lead in to being involved in commercial real estate. I left the city in 1986. I worked for a time for a company called Lowell Development Associates, which was started by former U.S. Senator Paul Tsongas. Later on, recruited by Combined Properties, and I was 5 years with Combined Properties as a development manager. And then in 1992, got recruited by Stuart and Peter Behnke to join Hahnemann. And so I started in 1992 at Hahnemann in the property management division.
Nice. Excellent. So that's a big change, obviously, going from the private sector then into the real estate. How much more exciting was working at Hahnemann than in the government sector?
You know,
seems like it'd be way more fun.
Yeah. Well, it was. And I'll tell you, the biggest change from public sector to private sector is the pace of decision making, the pace you needed to maintain to get things done. In the private sector, things are much more deliberate. They unfold over a much longer period of time. I think understanding the pace of business was the biggest adjustment that you have to make when you make that change from public sector to private sector.
Right. Robert, so you got out of Tufts, decided to conquer the world, and how'd you get here?
Well, when I got out of Tufts, the first thing I did is I traveled Europe for a few months with some friends, which was a lot of fun. But then afterwards, worked at a company that sold laboratory equipment, like little widgets. And my territory was actually Cambridge. And so I got to know the city pretty well. I lived in Somerville at the time. But I didn't like it. You know, it was a different type of sales. It was selling volume and quick sales, if that makes sense. Whereas I eventually got into real estate, it's a much different sales cycle. Negotiating a lease can take 2 years, which is something that I liked more in terms of the business. The way I got into the business was my older brother, David, was in the business, was working for at the time Leggett McCall. And I was introduced to a developer that needed help. It was the early 90s recession in the commercial real estate market. And Maycumber Development hired me on a hourly basis to go canvas buildings with their brochures. So I did that and eventually was hired by Leggett McCall, Grubb & Ellis in the early 90s.
That's interesting. I didn't know some of that, but it's funny. I started in 1989 in real estate, you know, before you got there, Robert, and just a little bit after Michael got in there. So we've had some, all the companies you said, you know, SS Pierce, all those things, know all about them. So pretty cool. So, you know, over the last 10 years, how has your relationship to Hunneman been? How has it been exciting for you guys? I know, Robert, you've been here for 6 or 7 years and you kind of switched positions at some point, Michael, from COO to broker. How was that transition for you, Michael, and how was being a broker?
It was different. While I was in the Hunneman Property Management Division, you have a lot of interaction with tenants and brokers and doing deals, so you got exposure from the landlord rep side, so to speak, as part of my property management experience. And while I was COO of Hunneman, I did work with clients. I did work with a lot of the NAI referrals that came in. I worked with those. So even though I was sort of doing the overseeing the operations and making sure the infrastructure of the commercial group was there for the brokers to do their jobs, I was also able to do some brokers. So it wasn't a totally, you know, 180 degree flip into brokerage, but I actually liked it a lot and wish I had done it a lot sooner.
Less headaches.
Less headaches, for sure.
Well, I hope I wasn't the one to kick you out of the COO role.
No, I think it was before me. No, at that time, that was 2015. So I had been COO since 2000 when Stewart bought all the commercial divisions back from Cendant and NRT. And he came to me and said, look, do you want to be, you know, I need somebody to sort of manage the brokerage operations. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, I did it for 15 years. I think that's a long time.
Yeah.
I think you try a lot of stuff, as you know, Steve. Yeah. You feel like you have to keep it fresh. I think at the time we were bringing in new partners like yourself. We were redoing the partnership structure. So, you know, I spoke to Stuart. I thought it was a really good time for me to step back from that operations role. And we had talent like yourself ready and able to step into that and function with that role. So I was pretty happy to be able to leave that behind and do brokerage.
You're right. It is hard to keep it fresh all it the
is.
Time.
Yeah.
You get in these ruts and you just, you know, you're like, oh, everything's good, but you got to keep spicing it up. So that's been the challenge. You know, this is my 26th year of running a company. So it's been, you know, challenging to do that consistently.
Oh, yeah.
So Robert, how about when you came over? You came from the biggest real estate firm in the world. And you came over here to Little Hunneman, which is not that little, by the way. How'd that transition go?
It was actually a really breath of fresh air. You know, we'd come over CBRE New England, which was a 50-50 joint venture between about 40 or 50 partners and CBRE, the national publicly traded company. And it covered all of New England. It was great. It was such a good set up. I remember once we went down on a retreat, the partners went on a retreat to Florida. We stayed at the Breakers, which is like a really
great
nice
spot.
Great spot.
Been there a lot. It's awesome.
But then the people from CBRE National flew in and they stayed at the Holiday Inn. It was like, this is great. So eventually we ended up selling out our partnership in 2019. And it was like a light switch just went off. You know, we had this really great decision maker in the corner office and then completely flipped on its head. And all of a sudden we had to start, you know, if you're negotiating an agency agreement, you had to call lawyers in Dallas, Texas to hash out what the agreement was. These are with clients that you've been with for 20 years. It was very frustrating. And an example I give is, I think in the first week or two, I brought some agency agreements into the Hunneman when I came over in 2019. And I just literally walked down the hall and asked one to you, Steve. And I said, and then Steve looked at the document. And he looked up at me and he says, is this good, Robert? And I said, yeah, it is. He said, good. He signed it.
I don't know if we want that out there. I'm supposed to review everything. Yeah. But, yeah. No, but you can just tell. I mean, you got to read it. You got to understand it. You know, you look at a few things. But yeah, we try to streamline things.
Yeah, that's a great change.
So, Robert, you and I have had some spicy conversations about politics. And I loved having it. I had a great time at lunch with you the other day when we talked a little bit about it. And, you know, as we both said, we're kind of closer to the middle than people would think. But the current atmosphere in Boston politically is ever-changing, as you know. What do you think the prospects are of the help for, you know, CRE to get bounced back? What are they doing to do that? And
I think that some of the things that have transpired recently have been good, better than I would have expected, particularly this conversion from commercial use to residential use. I think we're up to something like 1,500 units in downtown Boston, closing in on a couple thousand units. And it's having a meaningful impact in terms of removing commercial real estate from...
Yeah, they're doing a big one on Summer Street. They just announced.
Did they? Yeah.
The big one.
Yeah. I mean, so that's been a positive, no question.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes. I think that Boston's always had a really strong, I want to see if you guys agree with this, business setting that really helps with the political waves of the city. I think that there's been so many powerful people that have run Boston, real estate or businesses, that's just had an overwhelming effect on politics here. Is that still the same way, or is that kind of muted a little bit?
You know, I honestly don't know. The vault, I guess, does the vault still exist?
And no.
No. So they used to.
Yeah.
And that was a very powerful conduit, I think, for business interests to sort of communicate and give feedback to the political leadership in Boston and the state. So I don't know. I'm concerned about, you know, when I started back in the day and I was in the public sector and made the switch to the private sector, but for a long time, Massachusetts labored under the label of Taxachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And it really impacted Boston as a location for corporate headquarters. There was a concern in the 90s that Boston was really no longer a city that had a good stable of corporate headquarters companies here. Now that changed in the 90s and the 2000s, but I think it's slipping again. When you see things like the state has the highest electric costs in the country, for industry, that's not good.
No.
You see more and more states are going towards, you know, millionaires' taxes and things like that. Probably not good.
Yeah.
So I get concerned about that. I understand the needs. I love Massachusetts, and I know we want to take care of our people, but it has to be done in the right way.
Yeah, I mean, Boston's the greatest city to live in, I think. I mean, not that I've lived everywhere, but it's got everything. And I think education is always going to be a huge part of why people want to be here. They can override a lot of that, you know, stuff that's going on, but...
I think there should be a reinvestment in downtown. It should be just the opposite. There should be like a, whether it's infrastructure, maybe public transit, you know, something to bring people back. I think that hopefully in the future that's what, you know, our leaders will be focusing on.
Yeah. As you know, we had that discussion on the MBTA and my idea of doing the tolls and all that stuff, which probably other people have had. But the idea of a free MBTA, you know, more equal taxing of road use would reduce the congestion. More people would use the T if it was working better, which they've done a lot to get it that way. It's just, it takes forever. And obviously, you can't fix that overnight. But I think some of that might be coming down in the future, which will get people, more people back to work. I think the final thing with Corona is people not wanting to work, not wanting to come to work. You know, they want to work from home and that whole new thing. You know, that's been tough to manage. And a lot of companies have said, no, you're back to work 100%. Or X, Y, and Z. So I think that's interesting. So that rolls actually into my next question. We've talked about where you guys went to college. We've hired some guys from UMass Amherst. We've talked to a lot of guys from Tufts. Are these young kids ready to get into this world of the CRE? I mean, it's tough. When we interviewed all the kids at UMass Amherst, there was 100 of them we could have hired. I think we picked two really good ones. But it's hard to get into this business. And are they ready? That's the hard part. Are they ready if they get in it?
I'm surprised at how many young people are very interested in getting into the business.
I know.
It's like there's a lot. I was meeting next week with giving a presentation to the Tufts Real Estate Club. They have actually a club of students.
Yeah.
There's like 25 members, and it's all about real estate. They meet once a month, and I'm going to be giving them like a market overview to give them a sense for it. So are they ready? Well, they're a lot more earnest than I was.
I think they have more than we had.
I think do. They're a lot more serious. I think the big question is do they have the kind of the grit?
Work ethic, grit, yes.
Yeah, like do they, you know, will they... I hate to say it, like I walked 5 miles to school when I was 8 years old. I know. But yeah, I mean, you have to work very, very hard for like many years to make it in this industry. I remember going a stretch when I was working at Grubb & Ellis, and I was, you know, before I was married and had kids, I was probably about, I don't know, 30 or something years old. And I was in like every Saturday for like months and months and months on end.
You had to work on Saturdays.
You'd come in on Saturdays, and that's when you did all your paperwork because you were making calls during the week. You know, like you're on the phone constantly, and you did all the letters and correspondence and whatnot on Saturdays and cleaned up your office. And that's the type of ethics that, and kind of grit that you're going to need to make it, no matter what, whether it was 35 years ago or it's today. I think you still need that grit.
Oh, yeah. I did that. Worked on Saturday and on Sundays, me and Jim Lesko would go in paint storefronts on Tremont Street or Newberry Street, you know, in his truck, you know, on Sunday. That was a good week. We had a good week, you know. But it was what you needed to do. Yeah. So, Michael, your thoughts on these kids?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that is the biggest factor. I think it's hard for young kids to grasp. I'm not sure our business has really strict. It's sort of like not going to work for a bank and learning how to underwrite. And you go through a underwriting school and everything, it's still very much a trade craft where you have to hook on with the right team. They have to have a portfolio. You have to have a good mentor on that team that knows how to train a young person to do the right things. And I think that's still kind of tricky to navigate and hard to predict, you know, when you go into it. And I think most young kids don't anticipate really how hard it's going to be. You had asked Steve about the kids at UMass, and, you know, which is where I went to undergraduate and graduate. And I think that they're hard workers. Most of them, 60 to 70% of the students there come from the state. So they've lived here. They know the state. I think they have relationships here. So I think in a lot of ways, they're set up with that kind of background to sort of immediately sort of get the nuances of real estate location and things, because this is sort of their backyard. The other thing I think is that the university is still sort of a source of economic mobility for a lot of these kids. So a lot of these kids do have the grit, I think, that you need. So I think that's a plus. But it's still very difficult for young kids to get trained properly in the business. And it really... it's sort of a word of mouth. You have to kind of know somebody in the business to get placed with the right team. So it's not easy to break in.
Yeah, because they think they know everything too. I mean, that's a whole different situation that we went through. They, you know, their education is completely different than ours. You know, to me, just having good instincts, if you're going to be on the brokerage side, having the good instincts is what's really going to get you through.
Yeah,
you have to have that, and you have to work hard, as everyone does. And now we got AI coming in, which is just going to completely change everything. You know, we started using some of that here, which is fun. I'm glad that I'm not going to be doing it every day. that I'm going to be on the outside looking in on that, but the company's definitely going to get behind that as well.
Yeah.
So cool. So you give back to your school. Do you do anything with your school?
What I did was I got involved with setting up the University of Massachusetts Club in Boston, because the university felt that it was important to have a place that so many of the alumni are, you know, working and living in Boston, but UMass's flagship campus is in Amherst, and you have these satellites. So the club was thought of as a way to sort of allow the alums to continue to have connection with the university, and also for the club to be a place where students can come in and interact with the alums. So that's kind of mostly, I think, what I've done with the university since I've been out.
Yeah. Which is great. I've not been able to do much with mine because it's in Montana. But what one piece of advice would you give these kids coming into the real estate world?
Well, it's funny you mentioned AI, because I think the thing that I learned in my first big deal that I did, I was able to do it because I maintained a great, direct, honest relationship to the broker that was working on the other side of the deal. And I think, as I thought back, I would say with anybody wanting to get into the business, It's the relationships that you have, which are going to be at the core. AI is going to be great, but it's still that relationship that you're going to develop with your client that's going to be important, and also the integrity and the honesty that you need to maintain every single day in everything that you do. And that's going to carry you through.
Yeah, I just remember this article I read. I think it was in the Wall Street Journal, and it was an interesting article about, they compared two twins, and it was a true story, two twins, and they were both violinists at the age of like 8 or 9, and they were both kind of considered prodigies, but one went on to this illustrious career as a violinist in the world of music, and the other didn't, and they said, well, what was the difference? And the word that they used was, what I just used a few minutes ago, was grit. It's like one decided to work extremely hard, and they were focused. And so I think that foremost, what's going to delineate someone's success in our business. And the other thing is ethics. I think ethics are really important, and that gets back to relationships.
Yeah.
Trust. If you work really hard and people trust you, you're going to do well.
Absolutely. All right. You've talked about your first big deal a little bit. What was the one deal you did that said, damn, I've made it?
Yeah, that was when I worked at Combined Properties, and I was the development manager for a building that Combined had bought. I think they paid $13 million for it. It was a data printer building. It was about 170,000 square feet, right in Malden Center, across from the Orange Line. And the idea that I think Stan Black, the owner of Combined Properties, said he wanted to replicate the operations center that he pulled together for Bank of New England, which was right there at the Orange Line. So we wanted to do the same thing with the data printer building. So we bought the building, I'm going to say 87 or 88. I was in charge of trying to get the building leased up. We hired Grubb & Ellis. We hired, I think we had Cotman for a while. We finally sort of had Lynch Murphy Walsh, who had been set up at that time. But the crash of the 80s was beginning to put pressure on Combined Properties. Finally, we got two tenants teed up. We had Spinnaker Software, 70,000 square feet out of Cambridge, and we had Warner Cable, which was 50,000 square feet, and they had had an operation in Malden, and they needed more space. So we had those two deals teed up, ready to go. And I kept waiting for the leases to come back from John Pereira, who was working at Combined, and nothing was happening. I said, John, what's going on? And what was going on was, unbeknownst to me, Combined was negotiating with Bank of New England to give the keys back. And they didn't want to tell me because they didn't want me to stop anything I was doing to get the building leased up. So I had no idea what was going on. But we couldn't do those deals. I had to go and tell both tenants we weren't going to do those deals. But I was able, because of some of the things I just mentioned, to swing Warner Cable into another Combined Properties building. And I think the only reason why we were able to do that was because of the way we had interacted with them and the way I'd interacted with, I don't know if you remember this guy, Don Strobel was their tenant rep broker. You remember Don, he's a great guy. And I was able to put that deal, one of my first big deals, into another building rather than have it crater. And I kind of thought, I'm able to do this. And it took some, you mentioned the word grit. I think everybody that was involved with that had to have a lot of perseverance to get that deal done.
What'd you buy with your first commission? Big one.
I think I bought a used Jeep Grand Wagoneer for my wife.
Awesome.
This is the one. These are the days when the wood was on the side.
Now everyone wants them back.
That's right. Exactly.
Robert, how about you? What was your first I made it deal?
You know, when people get into our business, I always say that it takes like 4 years. It's almost like almost like a PhD. It's like more than a master's. You're not going to make a lot of money for the first 3 or 4 years. You're just going to scrape by, hopefully not fall into too deep of debt. But it was like my fourth year, and I sold, it was an open sale of a building in Cambridge that was like rumored to be on the market, and I luckily found a good buyer to buy it. And it was a big deal at the time, 1995, I think. And it was an $8.5 million sale, which was like a $200,000 commission. And I was like, yahoo! Paid off all my debts. And
so you just paid your debts off? You didn't buy anything?
Nothing left over.
Nothing to purchase. That's funny. So we're getting close here. So, Michael, you said in our partners meeting that you like this version of Hunneman. Is that based on the culture, based on, you know, where the real estate world is today. made you say that you like this version of Hunneman right now?
Yeah, I think, and I've seen a lot of versions of Hunneman in the 34 years that I've been here, but the reason why I like this version the best, or I think this is one of the best ones, is really three basic things. One, what I've experienced, you know, recently and from what I can see here in talking with people that are here more every day than I am, is there's a very strong collaborative culture here. And I think that's fostered on purpose. I think it's real. I think one of the things that's helped that a lot is we don't have the divisional silos anymore, which when I was here, the company was set up that way, the P&Ls were run that way. And I don't think it wasn't like at the time people didn't want to collaborate, but those silos just got in the way and made it more difficult. So this Hunneman is much more streamlined, much more nimble, and very collaborative, and I think that's great. The second thing is, I think, the outstanding growth in property management portfolio, and credit to you, Steve, for that. You know, we've talked about cycles. We all know how important property management is to insulate your company against cycles. And I think by having a very big property management portfolio, I think it really, even though Hunneman is, it's locally owned, it's independent, you know, it's a good sized firm. It's got some behemoths in the market, but I think that property management portfolio sets it apart a bit from other brokerage companies. So I think that's tremendous. When I was in property management, I always said that owning commercial real estate is sort of like owning a dairy farm. Somebody always has to be there to take care of the cows, and that's property management. And it's essential to the business. So I think that element is why this version is so great. And then the final thing, I think the company is very successful and comfortable in the niche that it's in right now. And I think that is so important. Everything's straightforward. It's streamlined. It's steeply grounded in, I think, Boston real estate expertise. And I think the values that are being taught here is to highly value the clients and to just work your ass off for them. And I think those are great values.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And thank you very much. I think that you're right on all three of those. The management got us through very difficult times in other companies and helped certainly here. But the last point was very poignant. It's just as, you know, we've changed to be streamlined. People work all together. Culture's fun. And people want to work here. And I think that's the best thing that you can have with a company when people want to come work here. Robert, last question for you. What was your favorite time at Hunneman? Not that it's over. Just what was your favorite time at Hunneman so far?
Those Christmas parties are pretty fun.
We've had some good Christmas parties.
Yeah, they've been very good.
We've had some good parties. But yeah. It's not all about partying. It's about, you know, getting together as workers and then becoming friends and then trusting each other and being able to work together more. So that's why we do it. And I think people really enjoy it. All right. A couple quick rapid fire questions. What is your favorite vacation place, Robert?
Jamestown, Rhode Island.
Nice. Are you going there this year?
I am. I'll be there in August.
Michael?
Falmouth, Mass, where I live.
You live in a vacation land, huh?
Right. That's pretty high on my list.
Robert, what is your favorite child? No, I'm just kidding.
I've got three.
So do I. What was the last book you read?
Well, I just finished Rick Atkinson's 2-volume set of The American Revolution.
Yeah, I've read those. Those are good.
Unbelievable. Really well written. But the thing that I learned by reading those books that I never completely understood was basically how resilient and how much perseverance Washington and the Continental Army and the colonial militias had. Because basically, they lost almost every single battle and most of the battles against the British. But Washington was smart enough to know that he didn't really have to win all those battles or even win the whole war. He just had to make sure that he didn't lose and they didn't go away. So in a way, it was grit and perseverance, something we've been talking about here, that really won the day for them. And I think that's a great lesson.
Yeah. Robert?
I'm reading another history book. It's called The Emperor of the Rising Moon by this author. Last name is Gwyn. And it's about the Comanche Indians, Native Indians in Texas in the 1830s and 1840s.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'll have to get that. Yeah. As you know, we've read a lot of the same books, like yes. Undaunted Courage and
yes.
some of those other, you know, 1776. I just finished a book called The League. It's about the formation of the NFL that started in 1920.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, the five people that kind of brought the league all the way through to the 60s before they started having collective bargaining agreements and they had a union and all that stuff. It was very interesting, some of the things they did. I did not know this, but back in the 50s, midway through the 50s, if you played, you had to stay on the field. If you went off the field, you couldn't come back on. So it's kind of like soccer. You come on, you can't. Then they changed it to, if you get off at the first half, you can come in the second half. And they just kept finally doing it, and then they finally got it to unlimited. And that's when defenses became, specialized and offense became specialized. It was one of the big triggers of the NFL that changed because college didn't change for like 7 or 8 years after they made those changes. And that put the pro game ahead of the college game because it was more wide open, more fun. And that was one of the big things they did, besides the draft and all those other things. But I thought it was interesting.
You gave me the book. I haven't read it yet on Teddy Roosevelt. They say Teddy Roosevelt saved the game of football.
Yeah, he did.
It's a really cool story where like there were so many deaths caused by the game that he pulled all the presidents of the universities, right, together at the White House, and they created a new set of rules to make it less dangerous. And they say that because a lot of the schools, like Harvard, was about to ban it.
Right. They had to wear helmets. They started doing different things. But yeah, that's a good book. I like that book.
Yeah.
All right, last question. What is your favorite restaurant to go to?
Well, I'm mostly down the Cape. So if you're down the Cape and you want to get a good local vibe, the Quarter Deck on Main Street, good music after about 10 o'clock at night is Liam McGuire's, good Guinness. So I don't know. Those are my picks.
How about the Cap'n Kid?
The Kid is good, too.
That's my uncle's restaurant. Yeah,
no kidding. Yeah, the Kid is great.
How about you, Robert?
Probably down in Rhode Island, too. Place that's called The Beach, as in the beech tree. It's this beautiful bar with this huge, like 300-year-old beech tree that just cascades over, and everyone's outdoors. It's a really pretty place.
Beach, B-E-E-C.
Yes.
Yeah, I get it.
Cool. Well, thank you guys very much for joining me today. I hope you guys had fun, and have a great day.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Well, thank you, Steve. Yeah, it was fun. Thanks.